If you have Bibles with you this morning, we're going to look at Luke chapter 12. And we're going to start at verse 22. David very wonderfully is going to make it appear behind me. Although I tend to wander, so I may get in your way. It may be more annoying than anything else. But Luke chapter 12. And I'm reading from the NIV version. Starting at verse 22, this is what Jesus says. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat, or about your body, what you'll wear. For life is more than food, and the body is more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They don't sow or reap. They have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? Since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider how the wild flowers grow. They don't labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? And don't set your heart on what you eat or drink. Don't worry about it. For the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourself that won't wear out, a treasure in heaven that won't fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning like servants waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door for him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. Truly I tell you, he will dress himself to serve, will have them recline at the table, and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes in the middle of the night or towards daybreak. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief was coming, he wouldn't have let his house be broken into. You also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you don't expect him." Amen. It was really good that Christine prayed for the schools and for kids going back to school. In Midlothian, that happens tomorrow. I don't know about here, is it the same? You get longer, Wednesday. I'm one of those parents that's breathing a slight sigh of relief, because on one hand, it feels like the summer has flown in. The 6 weeks have gone really quickly. We've done lots in them. On the other hand, it feels like it's been an eternity. And one of the things that's been really nice to realise is that Sarah and Peter, despite having a year apart at school, still play really nicely together when they play together. And they can do that for extended periods of time. And it's like they're the other's best friend. And that's really, really nice. So thankful for that. Saved lots of the holidays. However, there are still squabbles. And so occasionally, usually from the garden or the living room, comes a cry that goes something like this. "I'm telling Mum on you," or "Dad," and one of them comes running through to whichever one of us is around, usually with the other one pretty hot on the heels trying to tell their story, and they tell us what's going on, and they want us to settle some sort of dispute or skirmish amongst them. And in reality, they're all fairly minor things. He took my bit of Lego, he's not playing the game right, she's not doing this, whatever. But when they come to us like that, what they're looking for is for us to referee for them, to usually rule in their favour, if possible, to give the other one into trouble of some sort. That always helps. And to vindicate them, to make everything better. And in that moment, even if it's just for a moment, this really precious, good relationship that they share gets put aside because each of them just wants their own way. The passage we read this morning is quite a long one, and if we were to put it in context, something similar has just happened to Jesus. So just before where we started, a big crowd has developed around Jesus. He's teaching his disciples, and this large crowd arrives, or it starts to grow, and as it does, it gets so large that some people are being trampled. And Jesus is teaching the disciples and doing some of what Jesus does best and pulling no punches in what he says. And he's been quite scathing about warning the people not to be like the Pharisees and the other religious rulers. And then someone from the crowd, someone who remains nameless other than brother, shouts out, "Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And in that moment, he's looking for Jesus to do what Sarah and Peter are looking for Lionel or I to do. He's looking for Jesus to vindicate him, to put things right as he sees it, to tell him what to do. And in some ways, actually, what he's asking for isn't all that unusual. People in those days would go to rabbis, would go to people that they respected, and would ask for their advice on financial matters and a bunch of other stuff. And so, on one hand, the guy has given Jesus his place. He's given Jesus respect. But actually, the motive behind what he's doing isn't quite so pure. Things must have broken down in their relationship if instead of being able to sort it out amongst themselves, he's coming to Jesus to do it instead. And when Jesus answers, he doesn't actually give them a ruling. What he says to them is, "Who appointed me your judge and your arbiter?" Jesus goes on to, rather than just stop it there, make an example of what's going on and warns people about greed in all its various disguises, because he says that life is about more than just the possessions that you have and having more of them. He goes on to tell the parable of the rich man who had so much that he didn't have enough room to store it all, so he tore down his barns and built bigger barns in order to store the stuff he has. But Jesus says that when God came back, he told him at the end of his life that it was all pretty meaningless. And so Jesus ends that little section by saying to them, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves but isn't rich towards God. And so Jesus uses this dispute between these two brothers to make a really important point to the disciples and to those that were listening in. He exposes what's going on in their relationship. He exposes that it's broken, each trying to get security at the expense of the other one, each getting what they wanted or what they felt they were due, and never mind anyone else, each wanting to hoard up and store and hold on to rather than taking care of the other one. Rather than the death that had occurred bringing them together, their attitudes afterwards were pulling them apart. And it's really hard to tell whether their relationship was already broken and therefore they didn't trust each other in the matters that were happening, or whether actually their attitudes were what broke the relationship and therefore they were untrusting of each other. But either way, it's broken and they're not trusting. Joan Chichester is this Benedictine monk and author and just really wise woman in my eyes. I was introduced to some of her writing last year, and I've just finished another one of her books called Between the Dark and the Daylight. And in it, really timely, she writes about this mirage that we have of security. And I wrote down the quote because I thought it was really good. She says, "Security, at least in the form of money, is meant to provide us with options in difficult times." And of course it does. But it does other things as well that all too often become as much of a burden as a blessing. Obsession with financial security can blind us to the joy of the present and block us from daring a less financially attractive future. That was what the brothers were beginning to discover. And that was what Jesus was using to try and warn others of the same thing. And so we come to the passage that we read this morning, and it sounds as if Jesus is saying to them, don't worry, and it's a total break away from what's happened before. But actually, if you look at it really closely, it's just a continuation of what he's been saying. He hasn't finished teaching them yet. He hasn't finished drawing on everything that's going on. Jesus is trying to tell the disciples that the truth about security is that it's not a state of life as much as it's about a state of mind. Security doesn't come from storing up more and more and more, and neither does it come from worrying about what we have or what we don't have. Because Jesus says, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so Jesus asks them quite clearly, what does worry add to their life? And the answer is that it doesn't add anything at all. In fact, if anything, it detracts from life. Now, I don't know about you, but I personally am a natural born worrier. I don't have to work very hard at it. In fact, Lionel would tell you, often my first reaction is to worry, and I often have to work extremely hard not to worry. And more often I fail at that than I succeed at it. My immediate reaction in most circumstances, in most situations, is to worry, to panic, to think about what might go wrong, to imagine what might go wrong, to imagine the worst case scenario of the thing that might go wrong, to wonder what others are going to think about what might go wrong or what might have happened. And if I'm not careful, before I've even spoken a word out loud, my mind's gone to this weird place. And everything inside me is all tensed up and clenched up. And I wonder if you know that kind of feeling. And it's really easy to say, isn't it? Don't worry about it. Just let God deal with it. It rolls off our tongue, and to be honest, it rolls off some other people's tongues, and it ends up sounding more of a cliche than anything else. But that seems to be what Jesus is saying in the passage. Jesus tells them explicitly not to worry about what they'll eat or what they'll drink, because life is more than food and clothes and stuff. And so he gives the ravens as an example. They can't store up anything, and yet God provides all that they need. Or what about the lilies? They're here today and gone tomorrow, and they're clothed in splendor. Don't worry about it. What we need, God will provide. But just saying, don't worry about it, doesn't necessarily change anything for us, does it? Just telling me to stop worrying doesn't stop me from worrying. In fact, at times, it means that I end up worrying more. I end up worrying that I'm doing something wrong in worrying. And sometimes the situations and the circumstances that we find ourselves in mean that worry seems not just a natural response, but a right response. And so what do we do with the passage? Jesus, is he being too simplistic? Does he just not understand what life for us is like? Was it just for the disciples then, but actually life is so different for us now? Because it seems to me that generally, anxiety and worry are on the increase within our society. I'm not an expert, but that's just what I see around me. And sometimes we realise that because it's really blatantly obvious. If we think about Brexit, that dreaded word, without even thinking about our political persuasions, think about all the fear that surrounds it, one way and the other, around what that will do with our life together, different things that we're part of, different structures that we have in place. Other times it's more subtle, and we find ourselves living a lot of our lives that are worrying, concern, and we sometimes don't even realise it. We have worries about our health, our job, our friends and our family. Some of them, the people closest to us might know about. Other times we just hold them within ourselves. There's much more focus on people's mental health now than I think at times there has been in the past, and there's a lot more. It seems like we talk about it a lot more, and we want to make sure that we know it's okay for people to talk about it. And I think that's really, really good. And I want to encourage that more and more and more. But it also seems to me, and I'm not an expert, that if there's a need for this to be the case, then surely that also means that something about the way we're living, something about the way we're operating as a society is broken. And that that in some way is at the very least contributing to what's going on. And I know when it comes to mental health, that's not the whole story. But it's still a factor in it, isn't it? And it remains that worry is often something that we all live with, regardless, it seems, of our wealth, our status, our gender, our ethnicity, or anything else. And yet here again, we come back to the fact that Jesus is telling his disciples not to worry. And so what do we do with passages that seem so far removed from our experience? That at times can feel like they're adding pressure to us rather than taking it away. If we go back to what Jesus was saying before, then it all starts to be linked together. Because I think sometimes much of our worry stems from our security. It's around, do we have enough? What happens if we don't have enough? Am I good enough? Am I strong enough? Am I capable enough? What happens if the worst happens? Am I prepared enough? As Joan Chittister says so well, the problem is, how is it possible to tell what's about real security and what's about our insecurities? And I think sometimes in our quest for security, often what's revealed is our insecurities. So we end up focusing on ourselves, a bit like the brothers did, unable to look beyond ourselves and the world that's just now. Joan in her book goes on to say that there's a fear factor, an undue concern that means we end up clinging to what we have rather than launching out into the abilities and future that we could have because we abandon our dreams in favour of what's just safe. And so security and the need for it begins to preclude all other thoughts, and we live a life that's full of worry that at some point it will all just disappear. And now security is holding us prisoner. But security, she says, is not only bogus, it's completely out of our hands. Because often, it's totally dependent on outside influences over which we have no control, never did have any control, and won't have any control. Sometimes our worries stem from that feeling of being out of control, of being out of our depth. And in telling them not to worry, Jesus isn't telling the disciples to be reckless about their lives. He's not telling them to forget about everything and just go about blindly as if everything's going to be okay. Instead, what he's trying to show them is that the focus needs to change subtly. But that change makes all the difference. And it's almost despite their worries and because of their worries, that's why it needs to shift. It needs to shift off themselves and onto God, and on trying to be in control of everything for themselves, and onto God who is in control and who is at all times working for our good. It doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean that at times things don't happen that are still bad. It doesn't mean that suddenly everything is a bed of roses and things might not appear as we want them to. We know that really well at the moment. Our outward circumstances might not change, but it's by just knowing that God is in control and working for our good. And God can be trusted to have that at his heart for us. The exam results came out this week in England, a couple of weeks ago in Scotland. And I was thinking back to my fifth year higher results. We were at Soul Survivor with my youth group. We always got them at Soul Survivor. You were waiting for the phone call that morning. It was before the time they text you the results. And my exam results weren't at all what I was looking for. And I had my heart set on going to uni to study theology and music. And I was left feeling utterly bereft. What was I going to do now? It felt It's funny looking back on it, but it really did feel like the end of the world. And I took myself off for most of the day, but we had a rule that you had to go to worship together as a youth group. So we did that. And as I worshipped, as we prayed, and as others prayed for me, it's one of the few times in my life that I felt God speak in like an audible voice. Often it's a sense or a feeling, but this felt like a very audible voice. It felt like God said to me, "Don't worry. What I've put on your heart is okay and it's right. I'm just going to take you in a way that you don't realize and you don't see. Don't worry." And it felt like the most intense relief, the most intense feeling of just peace. And years later, that would be true. God is taking me in ways that I would never have dreamt of. But at the time, it felt like my world had fallen apart. And when Jesus is telling the disciples not to worry, to shift their focus, to seek God's kingdom first, it's because he's wanting to create that same sense of relief in them. That sense that it doesn't depend on them. And to create in them a kind of assurance of his love and of his care. And Jesus is saying, and if that's your focus, then everything else will be added to. Tom Wright says this about God's kingdom. He says, "The kingdom of God is at heart about God's sovereignty, sweeping the world with love and power, so that human beings, each made in God's image, and each one loved dearly, may relax in the knowledge that God is in control. Reflecting on the birds and the flowers isn't meant to encourage a kind of romantic nature mysticism," he says, "but to stimulate serious understanding. God the Creator loves to give good gifts. He loves to give you the kingdom. Loves, that is, to bring sovereign care and rescue right to your door." I love the imagery of what he's saying, isn't it? God's love and power sweeping the world. Being made in God's image. Being able to relax in the knowledge that God is in control. God's kingdom is marked by God's care. I have a friend when I was growing up whose favourite verse in the Bible was verse 32 in this passage. That, "Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom." And to me, it seemed like a really odd choice of favourite verse. It's not something I could get nearly as excited about as she could. And I think some of it is because I pictured a really serene picture of lambs and a shepherd. But I also know that sheep aren't quite like that. I don't know if you remember, Jan did a kids talk earlier this year based around the nature of sheep and some of the things that they're known for. I was driving home after our last church meeting and back roads back up to Gore Bridge. And I noticed at the side of the road this little thing moving around. So I stopped the car and a lamb had got out the field. Now, getting anywhere near it wasn't going to happen because every time I moved closer to it, it got more and more frightened and skittish and moving around the road. I got quite worried about it, so I drove back to the last set of houses, 10 o'clock at night, started knocking on doors until I found the farmer. He came out, dealt with the sheep, thanked me for stopping. And as I was driving away, I looked in my rearview mirror and he got much closer to it than I did. And I wonder if it's because they knew him a little bit. And now every time we pass the field coming to and from church, I'm looking for that little lamb, even though I know it's just like one amongst many. Well, the disciples weren't shepherds. They'd had a really good idea about the nature of sheep. And so when Jesus is calling them a little flock, they're not like me. They're not picturing this serene group of folk, this serene little bunch of white fluffiness. Instead, they have a much more realistic image. They know that sheep wander. They're easily frightened. They need guidance. They need correcting. They need corralling. And yet they're called to life together in a little flock. And it's to them that God has been pleased to give the kingdom. He knew they'd get worried. He knew they'd get scared. He knew they'd panic. And he knows the same about us. He knows that we get worried. He knows we panic. He knows we wonder if we've got in over our heads. And yet he says he's been pleased to give us the kingdom. And isn't it interesting? I'd never noticed it until the other week. That in that little verse, we're described as the flock. But God's described not as the shepherd, but as a father. Not as someone who's acting on our behalf in a distant or a remote way, or out of a sense of work ethic or duty, but someone who loves and cares and cherishes. That's God's nature. And so despite the circumstances that we find ourselves in as a church just now, or as individuals, Jesus is inviting us to realise and to remember that worry doesn't have to be dominant in our thoughts. Instead, God's kingdom can be. A kingdom that's marked by God's love and God's power sweeping the earth. A kingdom where we can relax in the knowledge that God is in control. That the one who flung stars into space and holds the universe together with all its complexities holds us. Holds us now and holds us forever. A good reminder as we try to keep following where we feel God's been leading us, even when it seems insecure and even when it would naturally breed insecurities. And so we come to the final part of the passage this morning, almost the bit that's tacked on the end. It begins with, be dressed, ready for service, and keep your lamps burning. Well, it's in part about getting ready for the second coming. Actually, it's about how we live life now. Because when we're seeking first God's kingdom, that means we're left free to serve. Free to serve him faithfully. And as we do that, I think we become part of God's care and God's concern coming right to the door, not just our door, but the door of others around us. As we seek God's kingdom to come even more fully on earth as it already is in heaven. And so let's pray together. God, we recognize that at times things other than your kingdom dominate our thoughts, whether that's worry, whether that's panic, whether that's at times a mistrust or an uncertainty. Help us to seek first your kingdom. Help us to hear your words this morning, not to worry, not as an extra pressure on us, but as something that brings relief. Knowing that you care, that you love us. And so would you make us, even now, even more ready to serve you? Would your kingdom come a little bit more on earth as it is in heaven? And would you use us for that? Amen.